Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
It is the Anfield Wrap. I'm Neil Atkinson, a very happy Neil Atkinson on this Monday morning after Bournemouth 0, Liverpool 4. I'm joined by Fuad Hassan, Ian Salmon and Adam Melia. We are in association with the good people at Green King, and 2024 is most definitely upon us. The year is 22 days old, but there is a packed schedule. There is FA Cup, there is obviously League Cup this midweek as well. There is AFCON, and there remains Premier League games to come. So beat the January Blues and watch every game with the atmosphere it deserves down at your local Green King sports pub. No need for dodgy streams or even being alone in yours. If it's on the telly, it'll be on at Green King across their huge HD screens. If you download the Green King sports app, you'll also receive 10% off every single drink whenever there's a game on. The venues offer a huge range of low and no alcohol options, so dry January doesn't mean you have to sit in yours. Get out and about and see people and be social. It was Bournemouth 0, it was Liverpool 4, it was Ian Salmon. An emphatic second half performance from the Reds.
It's an absolutely stunning second half, isn't it? It's as good as you would want a second half to be. I thought the first half, I was happy with the first half. I thought we were playing well. I thought we controlled it. Jürgen came out and disagreed with me very publicly on that one. And he's in charge, so I think he probably knows more than me what he wants from them. He seemed really, really quite unhappy with the first half in his post-match comments, really strongly criticising what
we've
done.
Do you think this is because he's... I think he might not have liked the first 10 or even the first 5, and then maybe...
I think the first 8.
Yeah, there's 3 or 4 corners, Liverpool can't play the way... I just sort of wonder if that is concerning, because you get the impression he's had enough of going 1-0 down.
Yeah, I can very, very much understand that as a theory. Do not go 1-0 down, because at some point you will stay 1-0 down for a very long time. But he was very heavy on the whole game and criticising, not the whole game, the whole half, and criticising the whole half and criticising our shape and our movements and where we were giving things away. And I was kind of like, well, yeah, 8 minutes I thought we were quite like dodgy. But after that, there was no problem. Mm. You know, Bournemouth had a shot on the 40th minute. And that's it. That's all they did. They didn't threaten us. They looked like they could threaten, but they didn't threaten at any real point. But as I said, it's his job to point out the things he finds wrong, because that's how you improve. And the second half, obviously, that tweak he does up top makes all the difference. So you guess, I think the first half, I'm possibly a little coloured by watching Alexis McAllister and thinking, this is one of the best midfield performances I've seen in quite a while from us. And the second half is the team, and it's the team as an entire unit. I think the team as an entire unit is much more cohesive second half.
Areola sort of disagrees. I mean, he's worth quoting at length post-match ads. Every now and again, I quite like to see what the opposition manager said, especially when they get into it. And I'll throw one quote at you and one quote at Fuad. Areola said, Liverpool are really physical, and they keep for 100 minutes this high intensity. They win a lot of duels in the middle. And once you become a little bit weaker and don't arrive too early and leave them a bit of space, it becomes really difficult, because they take the chances every time they arrive. Their finishes were very, very good. I mean, we've spurned chances at times this season, so we'll sort of park that bit. But I think I think that now, at the minute, when I'm watching us in first halves, I am sort of thinking, first and foremost, if we need to tweak it, change it, make subs, we will. But the other thing I'm thinking is, well, we're wearing them out. Yeah. They're having to strain every sinew to stay with us. Any opponent, really, during these first half periods. And Iriola's making that play, making that clear there, that 100 minutes with Liverpool is a long, long, long time to try to keep them at arm's length.
Yeah, I love that quote. I hadn't seen it before you put it in front of me, Neil, but it sounds like a football player, which he was. You know, he was a really good player, and it sounds like somebody that's summing up the feeling of their dressing room. And yeah, I think that's the feeling of the dressing room when you play Liverpool. And the thing I love about it, and the thing that I think is the main thing that's warming my heart, is it was a tricky away, and we didn't give them any encouragement. And I think that speaks to that you know, Iriola's there saying we didn't get any encouragement there. And I think that's the thing that Liverpool have grown, and it's the, you know, it's maybe the trickiest part of the jigsaw. But, you know, from the start of the season, I can't really think of all the games, but, you know, Chelsea away, you know, it's tricky away, and we give them encouragement and they go 1-0 up, and you know, it continues. Newcastle, there's others, isn't there? So I think sometime in between, that happens up to and including Palace away, to be fair. Yeah. We give Palace too much encouragement and they go 1-0 up, and after that it stops. We don't give Burnley any. And we didn't give Bournemouth any yesterday. I'm just using aways because I do think it's specifically an away thing. And yeah, in our poorer seasons, last season, we would give everybody encouragement. Everybody, we could have played Yeovil, and we'd have managed to drag ourselves down to their level by giving them encouragement. And so, in terms of what Ian says as well, I think that it always reminds me of the I think it's Carragher quote about, you know, when people say you're playing well, you mean you're attacking well. I thought we defended well in the first half yesterday, and we midfielded well. You know, there were things, I thought the first substitution was kind of, I thought it was obviously going to be, you know, Gakpo and Gravenberch for Diaz and Elliott. And, you know, it's probably because they may have been the weaker ones, but it's, you know, I think there is part of that where you know that this season has an attacking and a midfield substitute coming, and it's a key moment in our games. So yeah, I think obviously it's difficult to say how well you kind of maybe thought you were playing at the time, unless you take notes. I was a bit edgy, and I was worried about the weather and the, you know, other factors, Solanke, the fact that they're good, you know, they're top of the form table along with us, and so I was concerned about those factors. But I thought as the half went on, it was, you know, more and more that they seemed to be getting, I don't know about frustrated, but there was just no encouragement for them whatsoever. And I think the times when they did step up, and they did pass through us a few times, it was, I guess, by the end of the half, they just seemed at arm's length. I felt, you know, massive credit to Virgil and Konaté and I guess, you know, that defensive unit.
Can I just address that point about the Burnley game? The Burnley away, not giving players hope. Me and Neil were just talking outside about Jürgen's post-match press conference, and the interviewer put to him that something had changed from the Arsenal game onwards, and Jürgen asked the question, was Arsenal after United? Obviously Arsenal was after United. He then said no, it changed in the United game. I don't know what he thinks changed. I can't put my finger on why he thinks changed, but he said firmly it changed in the United game, and Burnley is the first away game after the United game. So what he could be talking about is that not giving teams hope any longer.
What he could also be talking about, and to Adam's point around the defending, before we get into Iriola's second quote, Fuad, there's one counter-attack they nearly get where, for instance, Curtis Jones absolutely sprints back to smother it, and just because it would have been 3-on-2, but Curtis makes sure it's not. And then the full cavalry come as well. And then that United game, there was a couple of times when it went a bit mad, when it felt like the defenders were just being left completely alone, and there was no help, you know, when it all got a bit end-to-end. That, to me, was striking, you know, seeing Jones leg it back there. It could be that, but the point is, Adam's point, you know, first half and second half, you know, regardless of how well Liverpool attack in the second half, in both halves, they defend ever so well, and the defenders play well at the defending bit of the game.
Yeah, totally, and defenders are always made to, I think Carragher said post-game, you know, defenders are always made to look worse or better given what's happening in front of them, given what the midfield are doing, those sort of bits. I think the thing about the manager being disappointed is quite interesting, because, you know, I think it comes down to simply the fact fact that he respects Bournemouth a lot. You spoke about that before the game. Yeah. They are a good team, and the last thing you want to give a good team is, you know, going 1-0 up. And I think out of any of the teams we played recently, you know, that in that sort of part of the table, they're the most likely to possibly make it too, because we talk about us riding crest of wave and momentum. I think Bournemouth have been very much that team, and when everything's going well, you can kind of slip into gear like that quite easily. So I think that was probably playing on their minds quite a lot early on. But yeah, you're totally right. I think the defending it as a team, and that quote's really interesting, isn't it? Because we wouldn't describe this Liverpool midfield, for example, as being very physical, but they are doing lots of what the workman midfield of yesteryear was doing, and I think that's quite important to remember, because, you know, these guys have got the quality, these guys have got the, you know, the tweak and shape where they end up on the pitch, but they are doing all those bits as well, which is not easy, and it's also quite a fine line between it working and it not working, because, you know, you sort of have to be everywhere, but, you know, sometimes you can get caught being nowhere at the same time, and you can be made to look a bit silly. So it is really impressive in that sense that Liverpool kind of showed that ability to ramp it up second half. You know, maybe the rest helps, all these sorts of things, but it's a really encouraging sign that the different players on that pitch can step up at different times in that game.
Iriola's next thing that I've quoted out from his post-match remarks: if you see the second half numbers of Liverpool, they are amazing. They are usually good in the first half, but in the second half, they are amazing. We know against this top level of opposition, we have to be at our best and have some moments of inspiration like they did with their first goal. We didn't find that. I think first and foremost, you know, I think there's a thing with the first goal. There's an old thing that Sean Rogers used to say on review, which is that goals tend to come from one player doing something amazing, or two players doing something very good, or the opposition making a mistake. For the goal, three players do something very good, and that's how Liverpool prosper, and they do it at such speed as well. But again, this idea of first and foremost Iriola, he's talking in general there about Liverpool's numbers in the second half, not just in this performance, which suggests he knows if this is 0-0 at half-time, we're going to find it hard. But that second half performance, it really was exceptional. Yeah. It helps when you score after 3 minutes to make it 1-0. Let's be clear. I thought it gave everyone a real boost.
Yeah, it's actually a brilliant goal all round, isn't it? Because, you know, first of all, Konate, you know, most defenders would just clear that, because it's the ball's loose, but he plays a brilliant diagonal pass in that weather, in those conditions. And the touch from Jones, the first time pass, and then, you know, we talk about Jota's intelligence in front of goal, but to play that ball first time, to see it, you know, most players, I think, would take a touch, and then, you know, if you're in the form he is and you kind of back yourself like he does, you'd shoot. And I think, you know, All those players linking up, you know, felt very, very difficult for me to imagine without Salah. I always think if Liverpool are going to score great team goals and it's going to be that sort of play, you know, you need Mo Salah there.
There would have been a Salah touch in it somewhere.
Exactly. There would have been something he does that takes someone away, or a really intelligent ball that we've seen more and more this season. But the fact that it comes from, you know, all four of those players, I think is brilliant. And you know, the finish, you know, say what you want about Darwin Nunez and in terms of what you'd expect from him, but he scores a very important goal. It's the first goal. I'm glad he gets the first goal, because that's, you know, that's the one that does change everything. It does unlock it. He can feel like he's really kind of contributed in that way as well.
Back-to-back away games now where he's done that in the league. He does it at Burnley as well. So he does it. And these are the away games where you need someone. Someone's got to break the deadlock. We need someone to break the deadlock. Nunez has now done it in his last two aways.
Totally. And you know, that's what we were screaming out at Luton. You know, he misses that one chance that he gets. But that really was his first chance of the game, I'd say, wasn't it? First proper chance, if you like. And it's a great finish. And then, yes, you're totally right. You score that quickly in the second half. I think they sort of realise that, yes, that second win, or that storm that the manager probably told us is coming from Liverpool, has arrived. And, you know, we were very controlled from then on, I thought.
Andrew Beasley tweeted, Adam, Liverpool's goal difference across all competitions is plus 49 this season. It's plus 8 in first halves and plus 41 in second halves. Now, it's worth, again, reasserting the point that it's easier to score a goal when you're ahead. Let's be clear about this. You know, the goals that matter are goals that put you one ahead, equalise, put you one ahead, or get you two ahead, you know, and kill a game off. So I think you've got to remember that here. But for me, this speaks volumes about not just the idea of what's going on in Liverpool's dressing room at half-time, what's being said by the manager. We praised the manager a lot recently, and I'm all for it, don't get me wrong. But the players have got to go and put the instructions into practice on the pitch. And I think you really get to see that with the fact that these footballers, yes, they're getting good advice, but they're following it. And you're seeing levels go up massively in second halves. And yesterday was no exception from Jota and Nunez in the attacking third in particular.
Yeah, I don't really think it's necessarily
by design fully. I mean, I remember when we used to talk about Rafa's teams when Rafa was our manager, and say that almost the first half is almost irrelevant at times. You know, nothing's going to happen in the first half, and then we'll score in the second half. I don't feel like that is the case. I feel like they're trying things, and every game's different. I thought yesterday, it seemed as though the players had sat down together. The attacking players sat down at half time and said, "Let's stop crossing it. You know, stop crossing it in from those sorts of positions where we're crossing it for a start. It's windy, and secondly, I think we'll get better results against this sort of patched up Bournemouth defence by just playing some little triangles on the edge of the box, and that's where the first goal comes from. And after that, I think it opens up as Field was saying." But yeah, I want to give the players credit. I think they are really they've shown this season so many times that they're brilliant at solving these problems attacking wise. Because you know teams have come with a plan to play Liverpool, because we're a top team, and this is home games and away games, and you know that's different each time, and you know they've almost always been able to solve it, you know, to kind of like work the Rubik's Cube out. There's only a couple of occasions where it feels like we've kind of run out of puff a little bit or something like that, or maybe haven't had the options, or the options haven't worked. For the most part, it's felt like we've got enough and then some, you know, by sort of 10, 15 minutes into the second half, it's like, well, we've well solved this one. There are still pieces of this team due to come back in, you know, massively important pieces too. So, yeah, I think I think they deserve a load of credit, and I think probably the manager would agree that was that sort of game in that sort of conditions this time of year away, blah blah blah, the season and the table as it is. That's one for the players to show their seriousness, and that's a real players game, I think.
Players game. But they also do get to tweak, Ian, and I think that this is fascinating now. You know, Nunez starts left. I think Liverpool might have been surprised to see that Bournemouth were going with a back three. Even when they see the team, I wasn't sure with the lineup. I was trying to guess who was going to be left back. But then at times it's a four from Bournemouth, and they're trying to move in and out of that shape, so it's not easy for Liverpool. Nunez does what he does off the left first half, but then it comes central. Jota, though, goes close to him. The midfield felt like it was reconfigurated. Joe Gomez felt like he came a lot narrower second half and was closer to McAllister and closer to Jones in there as well. Bradley continually gave width. I think it's interesting that the manager's got himself into this situation, and those players have got themselves into this situation where they are capable, even without the subs, and the subs do come, but they are capable of changing the entire structure of the side in an attacking sense in a 15-minute break. Everyone's open to it. Everyone wants to see it happen, and it's prospering for Liverpool.
Yeah, and there's the two sides of that. There's the obvious tweak where we change the whole shape, and there's that moment where there are moments where Gomez is basically doing Trent's role from the right, from the left. Mm. So he's playing a very similar, I'll drop to the midfield base from left back position, obviously realising they're not getting threatened in that position at all, really. There is the obvious tweak at the top where we change Darwin into the middle, because Darwin and first half had one of Darwin's frustrating games where nothing was quite happening for him. There's a ball that just falls behind him from, I think, Diaz. So we make the whole shape change. But
he's very deep at times as well, isn't he, the first half?
He was, yeah, wasn't he? It's, which, weirdly, when he turns into basically a false nine, well, it's not even a false nine, it's somewhere between a false nine and an orthodox nine that he's playing at that point. And he's further forward than he was when he was on the wing. So Jürgen again talked in his immediate post-match to Carragher and Redknapp about the fact that he wants the players to solve problems on the pitch. And this season is about them learning to solve the problems for themselves. And he talked about how good they were at solving those problems. So it is something he's aware of. Someone made the point on Twitter this morning that Darwin, for all, you know, I'm happy to criticise him when he misses a sitter and when he can be frustrating. He's currently doing what Bobby Firmino did, but with actually better numbers than Bobby was doing. So he's got the 10 assists and 10 goals, faster than anybody in the Premier League this season. And he is contributing in the way Firmino did by setting up other players. He's facilitating other players. So those options we've got at the top are absolutely fantastic. We've got that change. But at the same time, I think we're tiring. We are trying to solve things in the first half. We're trying to create things, but we're tiring teams out with our movements as well, because McAllister's constant switching was tiring people out. But also, we were pressing with three players at a time. Our high press was fantastic. And another Twitter point made this morning, somebody said, how can you call Areola the high priest of the high press when he's just played Jürgen Klopp and Jürgen's beaten him at the same time? His game, and the answer is because you've already got the phrase worked out and you have to put it in somewhere because it's such a good phrase. But our press was better than theirs.
Well, I think there's something interesting about that, Adam, on the pressing point. I think that was a real sort of one of the things I like about this Liverpool team at times is they're almost happy to say, all right, we'll play you at your game. Yeah. And I think there's definitely an element of that in that performance against Bournemouth across the 90 minutes. And Areola himself, I think that's part of what he's acknowledging there when he talks about 100 minutes, this high intensity, duels in the middle. I think he's probably going, yep, they came here and they did it. They did us. Yeah. They did us the way we've been doing sides. And they didn't get drawn in or sucked into a lot. Bournemouth do get into Liverpool's final third. Let's not act like they don't on occasions over the course of the game, Adam. But Liverpool didn't get sucked in the way Man United did when they played Bournemouth to try and things and playing into certain traps. And I think that's one of the reasons why Areola is as impressed as he is. You get the impression the Bournemouth players will be watching the video of this one, both in terms of this is what you should have done, look at what they do on the one hand, and also this is what you should have done when they try to do that, that's the way you're going to play. And I think that's in there, and that idea of that quality in the second half that Liverpool step into is so important when it comes to taking a side like that apart.
Yeah, it was a really young team, ours, and I thought it looked young, youthful. You know, there was that, like, they could look like they could run all day, all of them, the ones that were brought in afterwards as well. There's just more and more legs, which must be so soul-sapping if you're the opposition. You know, there's more whippets coming on now. They just kept coming. It felt like we had about seven subs in the end. They kept piling these young lads on, all with the same hair.
Yeah. All with the same hair, all Regents. With the same body shape. All got the same number somehow. Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure there's a rule, but no.
I've lost my train of thought there because I was thinking about all of the same hair. What I was going to say is, I think, to your point, Neil, I think that my favourite thing about yesterday, and it's sort of a little bit like what I was saying before, I think you can see how we've got better through this season. I'm really enjoying this season because I'm loving watching the improvement. So if you compare it to the Brighton game, the other game against somebody with kind of a similar-ish style, they are a different team and, you know, possibly a better team than Bournemouth. But we were much better yesterday than we did against Brighton. We didn't fall into any of those traps that were, you know, they were laid for us. You could see with their sort of corner routine at the start, yeah. Bournemouth did a clever corner there, and you could see they had some plans. And I just thought we just went nah. You know, in a large sense, you know, just showing them the way it was going to be and the way it wasn't going to be, and playing them at their own game. I just think I'm really buzzing about the improvements that we can see in all areas of the pitch, just from, you know, from a few months down the line.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
On those improvements, we'll add individual performances as well. Nunez, let's do him first. He's been mentioned by Ian. 10 goals, 10 assists in all comps. Still only 7 league goals. You feel as though that number will improve, I think, perhaps quite markedly through the rest of the campaign. But putting all of that to one side, little things like his contribution for the Jota goal, you know, could go down, doesn't, seize the opportunity. Other players may well have gone down, and that's not a criticism. It's absolutely fine to take a free kick in that position when your team's already ahead. But he senses the opportunities there. And I think this is when he's at his best, I think, is when he... I think that there's this determination to say, oh, when he has to think about it, X. I completely disagree with that. I think he's a clever player, and I think he is another one who's working things out on the pitch as he's going. And I think he's really good at working out opposition weaknesses, and that was one example of it in the moment. But I think all the way through that second half especially, he's going into areas they don't want him, and he's, and he's hurting them every single time he does.
Yeah, totally. I've never really liked the chaos thing about him. I don't think that's totally fair on him, but I do think there is an element of sort of chaos happening around him when he's in situations when he's sort of occupying certain areas and defenders.
He makes oppositions behave chaotically. Exactly. That's what you're saying, and I'm with that 100%.
Yeah, totally. There's a thing where, there's this uncertainty in defenders' mind of what to do, and you know, they sometimes think, oh, I can out-muscle this guy, but then he shows the strength in the right moment or the smartness as well. But yeah, I really like the link-up in the second half. I thought, you know, just generally the attackers were closer together, weren't they, in a basic sense. It felt like they were all able to, you know, be in the positions to do the goal that they did in for the first one, but he particular, you know, was just smart in his movement. I think the relationship with Jota is clearly something that's there to blossom and there to really work with, especially in this next period for however many weeks. But I like the idea of him scoring, you know, two very different types of goals as well. You know, it's a real centre forwards goal, the last one. It's a brilliant finish actually, because you know, the ball's not exactly on a plate for him to do that, and it's a hard angle. I just love seeing him celebrate as well. You know, he's a great celebrator, isn't he? He's one of the best
celebrators.
He just wanted to go to Joe Gomez after that one, and
I feel like they've got a narrative somehow.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. Like you say, they've got an arc.
Yeah,
Nunez's celebrations.
Honestly, they do. And, you know, he either wants to go into the away end or he wants to go find his mates.
It started with Carvalho's goal against Newcastle. Yeah. That was the Nunez celebration story. Started when he was just on the bench, telling the Newcastle bench to F up.
Yeah, doesn't matter where he is, he will get involved. So there's loads there. You know, in that sort of game where you know things aren't going right initially, and then we're seeing like the arc almost of him figuring it out with the rest of the team. And that's the other thing. You know, he didn't look isolated at any point in that second half. He did very much feel like he was part of the overall unit, and that can sometimes happen with him. I think not really totally his fault, but just generally with how the game goes. But yeah, I'm really excited to see where he goes, because for me he has to start. You know, if Liverpool put out their best team, he has to start in that front three.
Can I just say that final goal, that could have so easily looked absolutely ridiculous. If that goes wide, that's going to look like an appalling finish and everyone's on his back. So the confidence to actually do that with that technique, because that is a ridiculously good finish. But if it goes around the post, people will be talking about it as another one he's missed for the next 6 months.
Yeah.
So the actual confidence to do that is absolutely fantastic.
It's a really hard thing to score as many goals as he does first time. You know, there's that one last season, isn't there, where Trent plays it over, and it's an incredible finish to kind of caress that into the corner. And I think, you know, if you have that instinct, you obviously do have the ability to become a really, really good finisher, don't you? Because that's the hard bit to sort of coach, or to have. You kind of need that natural bit, and he's got it.
He's got it in spades, Adam, you know, and I'm intrigued by the extent to which he does feel part of the team. I think he's, I'm not just part of the team from the point of view, I think he loved the Gomez cross, and it was reminiscent, there's a Jota goal two seasons ago where Gomez whips one in and Jota scores. And in that context, you know, it reminds me a little bit of that. Obviously, that was an opener, as so many of Jota's goals are. This was a fourth. But my point is that he genuinely feels, he doesn't feel as though he believes his teammates are all there to put on a play for him. He feels as though he is part of a unit of a set of other footballers who are all in this together. He's got so many number nine-ish stylings, and yet he genuinely feels a real team player at the same time, in a way in which a lot of number nines don't.
Yeah, it's interesting, because I think it's partly his youth, and I think he is built like the main man, isn't he? You know, he's the main fella, the main striker, but because of a sort of youngness and a bit of sort of confidence and a bit of form issue, I think maybe he hasn't always kind of wanted to embrace that in his play. But I think that's his destiny. You know, I do. I think there's a season in which I was thinking about the one where Chelsea seemed to win 1-0 every week, and I think it was Diego Costa seemed to just score every week for Chelsea. And there's the, you know, if it, when the pressure starts to come on, and I think the pressure I think we were feeling that the pressure had arrived before the match yesterday. I felt like it anyway. Probably City's late winner at Newcastle meant that the season kind of, that the starting gun on the run-in was sort of fired at that point, I thought. So the pressure had arrived yesterday, and it needs somebody to be that person. And, you know, thankfully we've got, you know, 4-5 people that could step up to that mantle. But yeah, I can just, you can just see that story, you know, at every trickier way. You know, I'd love it if every trickier way there was a 1-0 Nunes moment, you know, and with Virgil, Konate and Alisson going now at the back. You know, I'm quite happy to win all of our away games 1-0
for the rest of the season.
that would be ideal. It's dead interesting, because I think it's kind of not, it always feels like there's a little bit still remaining with Darwin. But I think it was Steve said on the post match video yesterday that if he fulfilled his potential, he'd score 10 every game. Yeah. So it's not a possibility. But yeah,
unfair, wouldn't it?
There always does seem to be there's the next thing to come from him. You know, I guess it's because we've seen Torres and people like that. You know, you're imagining these sorts of things, and who knows, he might have that in his future. But yeah, everything he brings, you know, it's hard to sum up, isn't he? Yeah,
he is hard to sum up. Jota, on the other hand, sort of isn't. He's just dead-eyed killer, Adam. You know, he is the sort of the cliched version of the number nine in an odd way, even though he doesn't even spend a lot of time in that sort of position. He then finds himself where he needs to find himself, and just the ruthless nature of the finishing. And whenever he sniffs an opportunity, his general ruthless demeanour, I think, is incredible.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he's not as difficult to talk about, I don't think, as Nunes is. He's not hard at all. And since he's come back, it's been like exactly what we thought. You know, he came on and scored straight away against Burnley. And it's been like the inevitable, which doesn't always happen. Mm. You know, you have to remember that. He's worked really hard, and you don't always come back and hit the ground running like that. But yeah, I love about Jota, I was thinking about his Derby goal away at Goodison, the night game. I think, is it, did we win 4-1?
Yeah.
And them finishes yesterday were similar. It's almost like, where's that gone in?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Where's that ball gone in? You can't, even when you're watching it on telly, you need the replay. And so how hard must it be for the goalie?
Yeah.
Because if I'm just watching it on the telly and I can't tell where the ball's gone in, then, you know, his first finish yesterday, I couldn't believe he went near post when I saw the replay. I was like, because it's one of them where it just sort of makes...
I thought it had been deflected somehow.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was like, this is odd. And then you see it when you see from the different angle. But in real time, I thought, that's deflected in.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's not so much, as I say, it's not so much how has that gone in. It's where, you know, where has that actually crossed the line? Which could potentially, you know, you might think your keeper might look a bit silly, but his finishes are just unerring, and he does the Suarez thing, which, you know, is why I referenced that Everton goal of just, you know, the goal's big. You can put it in all sorts of places in the goal, which so many strikers don't do. But yeah, he's got that about him. But brilliant. A little bit of, I think you said, Ian Rush on your show yesterday, a little bit of Robbie Fowler, I thought too. Brilliant.
Just a question on that one. Did everybody else here watch it in the pub?
Yes.
Yeah.
So you wouldn't have heard it, because the thing I got from watching it at home, you heard it hit the post and heard it hit the net, and it was the most glorious noise you could possibly want to hear.
It was just wonderful percussion.
It was beautiful. Yeah. The timing was incredible on it. It's a stunning finish, isn't it?
He's like a shark, Ian. I absolutely adore what, you know, in the final third, when there's a little bit of space, you almost feel him. He comes alive. He almost looks different. His body looks different. I think he's fascinating as a footballer.
He's got absolute purpose, hasn't he? He knows his job is putting in the back of the net, and that's what he's going to do. He's scored so many different goals, and he'll score the scruffy ones. He'll score those tap-ins that others don't necessarily do, because he's just pure instinct. Far be it from me to try to start an argument with Jamie Carragher, not least because you always have the suspicion he could walk in at any minute.
He's in there.
Yeah, he's in the cupboard.
But that... I think that comparing him to Fowler might be a little bit of a stretch at the moment, because Robbie Fowler might have been the purest goal scorer I think I've ever seen. But he is... He's on
I mean,
the
I'm not around comparing him to Liverpool's highest ever goal scorer, well, Ian Rush, to be clear.
Yeah, but just in nature of the scoring, because Fowler was just clear instinct and clinical and
beautiful
lethal.
He
was incredible.
Feet. Unbelievable feet, Fowler.
But yeah. Should we just talk about Fowler's feet for a while? I think feels like a good diversion. Jota's on the list, isn't he? This is how spoiled we are. Jota's on the list with Fowler and Rush.
I loved his assist for Darwin too. I think that's the thing, and I can't remember which game it was, but he had another assist recently. Might have been the Newcastle game, and both of them, I can't remember which one it was now, but that's what we were kind of missing in terms of not just goal scoring, but doing the right thing. Sometimes the right thing is banging it in the corner, and sometimes the right thing is that pass, and it just has to be that one, and he knows that.
And Jota is so impressive that the commentator thought he was still on a hat-trick after Kay Gordon had come on for him.
There is the other moving part for the full 90 forward is Alexis McAllister. It looked to me, and I want to be clear about this, I think he's played really well for Liverpool. I think he's already had a good Liverpool career. The injury, I think, came at an annoying moment, but we were all right the other side of it. But that's the player we bought. That was the player that I fell in love with watching at Brighton, you know, and he hasn't suddenly developed some pace, you know, but he was so able to get away from people all match, I thought. He was winning his battles, and then he was able to find himself his yards, get away, push when he needed to push, find the ball he needed to find. I thought it was a tremendous performance, and if we weren't talking about two forwards each getting a brace of goals, for me there'd be no debate over man of the match.
Totally, yeah. I think in the first half, in what was quite a dull kind of period, we all sort of looked at him and he was the one that stuck out on the pitch in terms of the decision making, like you said, the instinct when to go, when to come back. He was really sharp with his tackles as well. I've always thought he's been a good tackler. I think that's something that doesn't really get said enough about him, that he is good in a tackle. He will be strong.
What I thought was interesting was I think he has always been good in a tackle when the tackles come to him.
Yeah.
Yesterday I thought he had such a sense, and again this could just be great preparation from Liverpool, but the players have got to put it into practice. He had such a sense of when it was going to be there to be 1 in 3 seconds.
Yeah.
So he got on his bike to go and win it. And to me, I thought that was incredible. And when Liverpool were turning the screw, that's what he was doing.
Yeah, totally. He was doing that really well. And he was a bit of a linchpin, wasn't he, in terms of setting off other players as well, in terms of pressing further up. The manager was interesting on him afterwards, wasn't he, in terms of how he said, you know, when we're at our best compactness-wise, McAllister's at his best. And I think that's a real thing in that position in general. You know, you can be made to look everywhere but nowhere quite easily if things behind you, in front of you, are a bit all over the place. It's a really hard position to sort of fully be in sync with all the time, and it's, you know, dependent on your other midfielders, all these sorts of things. And he had all that around him. You know, Liverpool were very compact and moved really well together in both halves, I thought, actually. And he's one where, you know, you got the element of when he's sharp with his tackling, when he's able to read the tackle well as well. But then that bit of quality to play a pass is the real kind of like added bit this season, isn't it, in terms of what we've seen from that position before. It's not necessarily a Hollywood pass, but it's a quick, simple pass, and it's a really intelligent one. The weight of it's right, the sort of intent on it in terms of where the player receiving it goes with it is always right with him. And I think that's something that Liverpool can, you know, really utilise. We've seen goals come from that before. He's very much a midfielder you're just excited to watch, aren't you, because he is very neat and tidy, but then there is that ability to do something quite sort of jazzy as well.
I also think he's a leader, and we, you know, you see that in various ways throughout the season. I think his leadership qualities in the first part of the season, although he sort of had a little rocky beginning, didn't he, with the sending off, were to be in the background and let other people shine. And I think it's interesting that yesterday being the first game with kind of no Endo and no Szoboszlai is the time where it seems as though the different leadership qualities that were needed were what we saw yesterday for me. And I think that's been kind of clear. You know, Klopp's been, it's been, we'll put him in the team at every
he loves
opportunity.
You, doesn't he?
I think he is one of those players who's the manager's voice on the pitch, kind of thing. And so I thought that was a great thing that we saw yesterday. And I thought, you know, on the sly, we've got a bit of an injury issue really in midfield, haven't we? You know, I don't think he wants to play Elliot from the start in midfield in away games like that, to be fair. And I thought the three of them, Elliot, Jones and McAllister, worked really, really hard, and they did work well as a unit. And it was, you know, a bit of a thankless task, especially for Harvey. You know, I'm sure he's made up to start, but maybe not made up to be that in that role, the kind of, you know, the donkey work instead of the coming on for the glorious last half hour thing. So yeah, it doesn't look as if we've got an injury problem there yesterday, and I think that's, you know, such credit to McAllister. He's stepped up, and he's shown the other half of the midfield role after the first half of the season, where he'd showed the other the less fireworks pieces.
Well, Harvey yesterday was basically doing, at 20 years old, the role of a 29-year-old Jordan Henderson with a world of experience behind him and doing it very well. So Harvey, I think, is dedicated enough to do anything he's asked to do just to be on the pitch. So he's had all, you know... He'll have more glory and he'll have more days when he does the Wijnaldum Henderson thing. I think Curtis Jones is also turned into a bit of a leader. So even as a young player, he's a calm, authoritative head on the pitch now. But McAllister just looked absolutely imperious yesterday. That first pass, the split four defenders open, that was just an incredible curveball to put through for us. He looks, again, Jürgen came out immediately after the match and talked, like you said, about how much of a six he actually is, because he knows people have been questioning whether he can play as a six. Yes, he can play as a six. He can do that. And he did everything that you would ever want from a six. I think there's a hell of a lot to come from this lad. And you would expect him to play with authority. He's a World Cup winner.
He looked like a World Cup winner.
He looked like a World Cup winner. And again, the commentator was talking about the fact that he didn't play in his position for Argentina. Well, he kind of did, because he was playing in a double pivot. So, you know, he has played as a six. It's not a new thing to him.
You can see what we're trying to do there. Yeah, you can see what we're trying to do yesterday, and why we wouldn't get somebody like, I don't know, a Pellini or somebody like that, that's kind of a classic six. You can see, you can start to really see where it's going.
Yeah, a Pellini will just stop the game. So he'll do what Fabinho did and just stop the game, pass on. He's not going to do the 2-yard pass to the nearest man unless he wants to. If he can see a ball that he can get through to the end of the pitch, he will do it.
Moving through on it, Fuad's next one I just want to talk about is the two centre-backs. I think you've got to talk about them as a pair with the goalkeeper as well. Although I love that shot of the three of them walking off the pitch, because that's what they are, you know, and it feels to me now like Konate is now emphatically settled as Liverpool's starting centre-half pair. I don't expect him to start midweek against Fulham. Could be wrong, because obviously the next game after that is a cup game against Norwich. So, you know, he may split his troops. He may decide to start strong against Fulham and hope that he can see it out in an hour. But my point is more, you know, I expect to see Konate start next to Van Dijk against Chelsea. I expect to see Konate when they go away to Arsenal. I expect that level of performance from them. As a three, they look absolutely deadly serious, the three of them.
Yeah, it's everything you want in that area of the pitch, isn't it? In terms of, you know, we talk about sharpness in both boxes being the big thing that wins you leagues, wins you football games. You got all of that with the three of them there. You know, the keeper, just, you take for granted, don't you, what he does a lot of the time in terms of reading things, anything that's a little bit dangerous that comes to his near post as a cross, isn't there, in the first half, that he just sort of deals with, and there's no fuss, there's no kind of nonsense. And the same with the centre halves. I think they're just both, they both offer that layer of comfort. They're both also really smart. There's a couple of moments where Konate stepped up and, you know, went in for a press when he saw others were going, and it was really smart. Most centre halves wouldn't think like that, and I know Liverpool's our program to think like that, and you have to do that. But he's really got that ability to be a leader and to be, you know, very much again a part of the unit. It's not the back line and the midfield and the front three. They all work together so well. And yeah, I mean, the quality on the ball as well is brilliant. Like I said, for the first goal earlier, you know, it's a brilliant ball. It's one very few centre halves would even think about, very few players would even think about, because it should be a clearance, really. But the forward thinking, the sort of idea of starting a goal out of a clearance is what this sort of Liverpool team is all about, I think. And yeah, I think the manager, you know, before the game, he didn't really give him too much praise, didn't he? I think he was asked in the press conference about Konate, and, you know, the journalist kind of wanted him to sort of talk him up a lot. Funny. And he wasn't really like that asked about it.
He did in the end.
He did in the end, but he was sort of like, yeah, you know, that's just him. You know, he is that good. And I think that's the thing. He wants that level of consistency from now on, and he's capable of it, like, totally.
The captain is impeccable again, Ian, all the way through the game. Blocks, I think, practically everything. I think he might still be blocking things now. There's that much blocking going on from him. He just looked like he knew exactly where his positioning is. And again, the two of them with the goalkeeper, they're just so calm. They're such calm presences all the way through the match.
Yeah, it's the thoughtfulness of Virgil. He knows exactly what he needs to do. And I think it's Jota's first goal that comes from Virgil, deciding that he's not going to put out for touch. He's going to take the ball round Solanke and he's going to get the out ball down the wing, and everything starts from there. Yeah. So it's that moment of, again, starting the attack from the defence, and we're doing it perfectly at the moment. And Virgil, I remember making the point at the first game of the season, first post-game show we did, first Monday show after the first game of the season, where his warm-up as captain for the first time looked like a warm-up of a person who intended to take this role very seriously. And I said at the time, it sounds stupid, and it probably sounds stupid now, but he looked like a man who had an absolute intent that this was going to be his season. And he's making it that way, that the captain's armband is just taking him to a new level. He may actually currently be playing the best football of his career.
Last one, Adam, is Conor Bradley. I do want to talk about, because they've got good wide players. It's important, this. Just because the Bournemouth doesn't mean they haven't got good wide players. They've got good wide players. They've got wide players who can rotate. It's not the threat of having to deal with just one player. There's a lot going on in there. They move around. They move into the space. I thought Bradley deals with it all, you know, absolutely in his stride. And you can see he's a genuine threat in the opposite direction as well.
Yeah, he should score, actually. He's
twice.
It looks so in, doesn't it?
Yeah. I can't remember. The header and the shot. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I was thinking of the header. I think he sort of makes slightly the wrong decision with it. But, you know, for somebody who's so recently come into the team, to be there getting on the end of chances is hugely, you know, I mean, I don't think we saw that from Robertson for months and months, kind of thing, after he started. So, I mean, yeah, we just feel really, really blessed. You know, it's incredible, to be fair, that we've wondered who on earth we can kind of get to step into these positions and be understood.
Bradley and Gomez, they're incredible.
and you know, that's exactly what you would want, because it's so difficult to go out and buy those types of players, because you know that you're maybe not going to get to play that often, but you need to be really good. And now, you know, that this is just an absolutely dream scenario. You're kind of pinching yourself, to be honest, at the moment with the young players coming through. And there's, you know, whenever because of how it works with the youth system, whenever it was that this change has happened, which has led to it, you know, that lots of people deserve a whole load of credit. I think we talked about it on the gutter the other week on Rob's show about what you kind of want your academy to do. And you know, in terms of, I think I'd say keep bringing through really, really good fullbacks, and you know that particular thing. Mm. I think Ian said it before. You know, the kind of he's got like a fullback body shape, and you know that he just, you know, it is almost like that we've kind of got this little production line going on at the moment, and yeah, I think, and I haven't even mentioned him yet. I thought he was fantastic, and I thought he's just it's similar to, as I was saying with Jota, he's come on and done exactly what everybody kind of hoped he was going to do, and you know, there's nothing kind of inevitable about that. It's really hard, and he's fulfilled and exceeded expectations. And yeah, as I say, the fact that he's starting to get on the end of things as well means that you've really got something bubbling under there. I think
the academy shout is massive, because whereas Robbo came in and he took 3 months to learn Jürgen's game, Conor Bradley's had, what, 3 years now since we signed him, longer?
Mm.
So yeah. He's come through the system. We are developing Jürgen Klopp players all the way through the academy.
And it was a great loan for him as well. And you can understand, Ian, in that context, why, for instance, the pulling back footballers, where they don't feel they're having a good loan. You know, because I think that they can see what the benefits of a good loan is to a player. Yeah. So Bradley, you know, plays a bit at right mid at Bolton, a bit at right wing, a bit at right wing back when they play that shape. So he gets the full gamut of experience. He's there every week. He wins awards for them. They all speak so highly of him as a person as well as a player. You know, you can see why they want them to have good loans, especially if it turns them into these sorts of footballers.
Yeah, in the same way that the year-long loan benefits Harvey Elliott so much, rounded his game out. And obviously we bring Cavalio back and loan him out to somebody else because, well, you know, we can see that it's not working over in Germany. So you bring him back and you send him to Hull to play alongside Tyler Morton, and all of a sudden, first game he gets caught. So, yeah, what more can you want from the lad? And then the flip side of it is to bring Owen Beck back.
Yeah.
Because he looks so good for Dundee, was he? Mm. So he's looking so good, and we need a left back. He comes on, he does
good dribbler.
He does nothing wrong. He does really well. He looks really good. He carries the ball well. The only issue I have with Owen Beck is him being Ian Rush's great nephew, which makes me feel unbelievably old.
They look like a team that can win the league, Fouad. And what I mean by that is, I think since the Burnley game, I think at times the game against Arsenal, yes, but I think since the Burnley game especially, because I expect Liverpool to play well at home against Arsenal. You know, I expected what I got against Manchester United. I just thought Liverpool would make it 1-0 at some point, but I expected it to be that sort of game. And that was a difficult game to judge the test of. We've seen them show enormous character away at Palace when they weren't very good and they pull it round. But the Burnley game, the Newcastle game, and now this one against Bournemouth, they just look like a team that can win the league. That isn't the same as saying that they will. But they look like, first, that they can, but also, secondly, they know what this is that they're in. And I think that's my other big takeaway from yesterday, is they look like a side who know what's at stake. This isn't now just building a season and see where we are. I think they've seen where they are and they're all in.
Yeah, totally. And it doesn't feel like it's going to be a thing where they shrink at that. You know, the players are talking about it. We've heard it, you know, in the last few months. But even yesterday, Jota mentions, you know, yeah, it's business as usual. We've got to go play Arsenal. We've got to go play Chelsea. And we've got to win those games if we want to win the title. You know, he puts it as plainly as that. And there's a very clear objective. And I think that clarity helps a lot of them.
I reckon Jota's got clarity in everything he does.
He does, doesn't he?
Like, he
does.
Makes the most efficient cheese sandwich you've ever seen. Do you know what I mean? If he's allowed cheese sandwiches, he might not be allowed them. But if he was making one, there's no messing around.
Oh, yeah. His cup of teas would be absolutely brilliant.
Phenomenal, inch perfect.
Timed. Yeah. That's
he empties the dishwasher after he puts the tea bag in. Yeah. And he's got 4 minutes to take some, and then the tea bag comes out, and the whole thing's just.
I can see that. Yeah, I can totally see that. That mentality, though, I think is really helpful for these players. When we talk about the inexperience, but we also talk about the experience that is there, that's the huge thing, I think, to remember when we talk about this being a young side, a new side. There is that kind of skeleton of players who've gone and done it, and the young ones who've now come into the team who were around the squad at that time as well. So I think all that and the blend of that is really useful. And, you know, we talk about the players that have been brought in. McAllister, you know, wins the World Cup. You know, that's experience. If I've seen experience, that's what you'd want from your signing. So, yeah, there's loads there. They figured out away from home, you know, the rhythms of a 90 minutes away from home, I think. You know, not letting bad periods get into their heads, not giving away massive gifts. You know, that was something we saw earlier on in the season, didn't we? That's been cut out completely. So they've managed to get a grasp of what it takes to go away from home and sort of turn things into routine wins.
You've been talking about enjoying this season. What I'm enjoying is being in possession. I think that in the past we've not been in possession as much as I'd like, and now I feel like we've been in possession for an extended period of time. We're effectively in possession for a month, Adam, at this point, and that to me is also a genuine joy. And I think we're enjoying being in possession. You know, I think we're enjoying. This doesn't look to me like a team that's going to be panicked by the idea that it's leading. I think it's loving the fact that it's leading, and you're seeing it in everything it does.
Yeah, I think we're wearing it lightly. I think that it doesn't seem to be weighing heavily on any shoulders. There will be pressurized moments to come. But you know, as things stand, you couldn't ask for much more. And you know, we're loving telling the story and wondering what the next part of it's going to be. I'll keep saying it because it is rare. I am enjoying this season. I think it's because you're there with them and you're there with every improvement, and you can see, you know, you can start writing it in your head. The problem is that there's another team that are writing their own story as well, and you know that it seems to be a story that the wider media is very keen to tell, the story of how Man City are going to sweep all before them and win this league. There's different things that you kind of think, and this, you know, with the fixtures, they are the way they are to come, and the fact that we are in the lead, it can't help but make me think about how we kind of our title challenge of 18-19 founded on aways at Old Trafford and Goodison Park. You know, they're on the horizon, and that's the only thing that's kind of, you know, keeping me up nights, although I'm still, as I say, enjoying it, is the idea of City getting something at Anfield and then us not getting maximum points from those, and then City win it by 1 point again or on goal difference. You know, we've seen it happen, so it's not, you know, I think in those seasons it was like, well, that can't happen, because surely they won't win it by 1 point, and then surely they won't win it by 1 point again. So it can happen, you know, these things are possible. But the other thing that's in the back of my mind is imagine they have a wobble. You know, we're already 5 points clear. Imagine that the other thing happens and City have a wobble and
Arsenal,
who knows,
remain being the way they are, which is quite inconsistent.
Yeah, and
the goal,
and because we're already five points clear. I know that's, you know, there's games in hands and things like that, but there is a world where we're more than 5 points ahead, and when City come to Anfield, and yeah, it's really exciting, and you know, you can't predict what's going to happen. But yeah, I think our story is starting to be spoken about. I think they talked us up on Match of the Day instead of talking about the refereeing decisions. But it was nice that they talked us up.
Yeah, I'm fine with them not talking about the refereeing decisions.
I know, and we're not going to talk about it today.
No, so not going to talk about it.
I forgot about them.
A couple of slightly mad ones in the entirety. But
I'm going to bounce back to that immediately. If City win the league by 1 point, which they're not going to, but if they do, I want to do Michael Owen's show with Howard Webb because I have questions for him.
Please wear that cardigan if you do.
Yeah,
I will do. Quite happily.
Rightly so. Fulham midweek, Ian. Jones going off is actually the only downer from yesterday. Looked like a tight hamstring. Didn't look like it was anything terminal, but you never know with the way in which, you know, the amount that we asked the players to go through. I'll personally be happy to see a bit more Bobby Clark in general. I don't expect to see Bobby Clark from the start. I do expect to see Kwanzaa. I also think there's a chance it's a weirdly strong bench. Ian, what are you expecting from the team against Fulham?
As close to yesterday's team as possible, I think. I do think it could be a weirdly strong bench because I don't think we're going to start Trent or Szoboszlai or Robbo. I think we will see the three of them on the bench, which obviously makes it the strongest bench we've had in about 3 weeks, because there are moments, you know, last night we had two goalies on the bench. That's how thin the bench was. But we were able to bring on five subs, four of them had really good games. So, you know, you can't complain about the thinness of a bench if it works. So I think it's going to be, I think it's got to be a strong team against Fulham, because we need to win this.
Yeah.
It's the most important game in our lives at the moment. For the next 4 months, the most important game in our lives is the next game. So this gets us to Wembley. This gets us the potential of a trophy. I'd prefer not to play Chelsea again. I would like to be playing Middlesbrough. That would be lovely.
Yeah, we've got a weird record though in finals against sides from the division below. Like we tend to win, but it's never pretty.
It's usually penalties.
Yeah, they're never classics. Yeah. They're never classics. It's fair to say. Do you think it'll be as close as to the team as yesterday, Adam? I think he might throw one in, not one of the. I think there's a chance if Robertson and Shimakas are both close. I think there's a chance he gives them 45 and 45, but he's also got Norwich on the horizon where he could do that. I sort of wouldn't be surprised if he throws a Cade Gordon in or something. And as the idea of I'd like to have the subs if I need them, the cavalry, you know, in case this is going all the way, because Fulham have got one back. I think there might be one thrown in that we don't quite see coming, is what I'm saying. But I do expect Kwanzaa to start next to Van Dijk.
Me too. I'd be dead surprised if any of these returning players actually start. We've talked up Konate and Jota. The only thing is they are both kind of injury prone, aren't they? So I think you have to protect Konate. I'd really like it if he just managed to absorb Virgil's every game quality. That's literally the only thing that's missing from him as a player. I think that Klopp sees cup ties as he will pick exactly what he needs to get through it, and the fact that we've got a lead, I think he will, he's brave, I think, with cup ties, and I think we needed to win at Anfield for him to be able to be a little bit brave, I think, in the second leg, because I think he'll think a draw's fine, we'll hang on to our nil. I expect Kwanzaa, and I expect it. Yeah, I'm not sure, but I think that will be the mindset. I'm struggling to pick my actual 11, but yeah, I think the mindset will be we a draw is fine here, and we march on to Wembley, even if it needs to be ground out a bit.
If I was the manager, I'd double down on Nunez up front. See if you can get another goal and two away from home, and just sort of, as Adam was saying earlier on, build that pattern. Gakpo doesn't start, so you think Gakpo's going to start. Could be that Diaz, you know, doesn't play the whole 90, he comes off quite early. Could be that Diaz is therefore in line. But it doesn't always work that way with Klopp. He is a little bit unpredictable. He gives Beck a look at the pitch. I just sort of think he'll go Gomez again.
I think so as well.
I think that's fair.
Yeah, I think the Norwich things are really nice. It's a nice game to have when it comes. You know, if that was a league game, then maybe we'd be looking at things differently, and he would be looking at things differently. I mean, definitely he would be. I think that gives you a chance to, you know, to bring back a rusty Andy Robertson, a rusty, you know, Trent. Well, if he is rusty, I doubt he is. So that's nice for him to know is in his kind of back pocket and is to come. I think the mad one might be, you know, a bit of a thing like Cade Gordon, because he did that, didn't he, against Arsenal?
Yeah.
In the League Cup, in the same game.
And there's a chance,
right?
Clark or Gordon start, and either Elliot plays right wing or Gordon plays there, and Elliot plays in midfield again. I think there's a chance of that. And the reason why is because I think he likes having two go to subs, and if he hasn't got Jones. And he doesn't want to take a risk with anyone who's coming back outside of his control, if you know what I mean. Then I think he might think, is there a way I can hold one back by having a look at someone else? And I think Clark or Gordon could feature.
Yeah, no, totally. And I like the idea of, I feel like at this period when Jota's the way he is, and he loves January and February, doesn't he? He's a man who lives for this part of the season. I, it's the sort of game where you just feel like he could seal it, you know, quite early on. He could sort of kill it quite early on. So I get the fitness concern, but I'd look to go as strong as possible in that area with a Cade Gordon or a Clark.
Okay.
I think Joe Gomez plays. I've got this thing where I think he always plays well in London.
I quite like it's a theory.
Because his mates are there. I've decided he always plays well at Palace because his mates live down the road and they're probably all there.
And he's got them tickets and he wants to put a show on for them and he's going to see them after.
Exactly. Yeah. And maybe Fulham is the game where he bags because it's coming.
Yeah.
Salah, quickly, Ian, coming home for his recuperation.
Thank God.
We'll find out whether or not Egypt progress in the competition. When you're listening to this, it might be done. It might not be, 8 p.m. Against Cape Verde. The one thing that yesterday does, in the context of a couple of other performances recently, is even if Egypt go out, Liverpool don't need to rush with Salah. They need to get him right, and I think that'll be the priority.
Yeah, but I think getting him home to recuperate is the perfect thing, because no disrespect to Egypt's medical team, who are probably very good, but I think we have more money to pay.
That, but also, they're not at home, if you know what I mean. Yeah. Like Egypt are not
going on.
They've got enough going on. Egypt are, it's a tournament.
Yeah.
Egypt are away themselves. And I think it's the idea of, you know, consistency, continuity, people who know the player, who work with them regularly, all those hits. It's in Egypt's interest, I think, as well.
Yeah, if they get to the final, he's ready for the final. He goes back for the final. It's not a case of bringing them back and keeping him at their expense.
Yeah.
As soon as he's fit, he's back with Egypt. So give him to the best doctors he can possibly work with, which is obviously...
And let him sleep in his own house and all the hits. Yeah.
So make it as easy for him as possible.
There wasn't a point yesterday where I was looking at that going, oh, I'm really missing Mo Salah. Obviously, I'd like Mo Salah back, please. But, you know, at the same time, it doesn't feel like there's this huge sort of thing to rush him back. Like you said, it's the first time ever we've had this many options in those forward positions, and options of real quality. You know, we're not talking about kids coming off the bench when we make double substitutions. We're talking about, you know, international players and really, really good forwards. So I think in that regard, the signs we saw yesterday in terms of how they scored the goals, the type of goals they scored, it's really encouraging. There's no, you know, the spark is elsewhere. There are other players who can provide that, and there are other ways for Liverpool to score goals and be dangerous.
I'm a bit worried about him. I think in the same... Did Klopp say it? It's worrying because he doesn't really get injured. So the fact that he's injured, as much as the severity, has just got me a little bit... It's made me feel a little bit unsteady, because he's Mr. Dependable, and you know, you don't want to see your strikers getting hamstring injuries. The fact that they're bringing him home doesn't kind of make me feel better in a way. I don't know. I just want him to be better soon, basically. And I'm just a bit concerned, really, I suppose.
Because that's legitimate.
There just seems to be a bit mysterious. I thought it was mysterious how the Egyptian FA said he was going to miss exactly two games. That was weird. And, you know, Klopp's comments were also sort of unsettled me a little bit. We just don't know, do we? And
I think it's difficult when they are abroad. And I think it's difficult when, you know, again, being perfectly respectful, but the idea of... they've got a tournament they want to win. Like, I'm delighted. The reason why I'm delighted he's coming back is that it means that you haven't got a manager who every day says to the medical staff, what do you reckon? Is there a chance?
Yeah.
I think the idea that, no, that we're dealing with this, that's what reassures me.
The nightmare
me.
Scenario was that they rush him back and he gets a serious...
And he gets something that's 3 months exactly or something like that. And for me, Adam, that's the most important. That's what I don't want to see happen. That's what my point about no rush, you know, even with an Arsenal away on the horizon. If he can't make it, he can't make it. We'll just have to sort it out through other means. And I feel at the minute like that'll be the attitude. I think even we don't need... My point is, now that he's not there, he's not going to be rushed back. We don't need to rush him back. We just want him to be in the best possible nick for the running.
Yeah, it's funny. I think it's just the mystery of it. So there's a dream scenario too. The dream scenario is that he's having a nice little break and he's not really that bad. and he gets a little winter break and then he's back for us and he doesn't have to play for Egypt again. You know, for a Liverpool point of view, that's the dream scenario. The nightmare scenario is the one where he gets rushed back and then makes it far worse. So yeah, I think it's all up in the air. But yeah, you're right. It's good for him to be back here rather than there with that risk of him getting rushed back and playing.
Excellent stuff. Excellent all round. Liverpool feeling very, very good, Nick. Everything you need post-match, building up to and after the match against Fulham. We did post-match pints as a live, freely available on YouTube yesterday. It was a pleasure to do that. Went long, but that's because I'm having so much fun with Rob and Steve. Someone put up a remark in that I felt like me and Steve towards the end of it were trying to goad Rob into more and more grandiose statements as it was wearing on. It wasn't a deliberate decision, and yet in hindsight, I feel as though it was an excellent one that we intuitively both came to. There is loads and loads going on the Anfield app. Do consider subscribing if you haven't done so already to everything that we offer. You can do it through YouTube if you want to. You can do it through Patreon if you want to. And you can do it through our app and website as well. As I say, such a range of shows and so many different ways for you to get right the way through. I'm looking forward to weekend today. Got overview tomorrow as well. All of this coming. Liverpool, though, go to Fulham. Lads coming back, both literally in the case of Mo Salah and figuratively in terms of being available for selection. A League Cup semi-final, a potential trip to Wembley, Norwich on the horizon. I disagree with Ian Salmon, though. The biggest game of our lives is next Wednesday against Chelsea because Liverpool can win this league, you know. Sports Social Podcast Network.